Hey, and welcome back to the Great Men Do Exist video series. Today, I'm here with Scott McKay. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and I hope I can somehow fulfill on the topic of this particular summit.
Yes. Scott is one of the most recognized and effective dating coaches to both men and women on the global stage. Now, a four-time Amazon number one best-selling author, over 400 media outlets have consulted him, including ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, BBC, MTV, Lifetime, Men's Health, and the Wall Street Journal. That's a mouthful. He travels the world with his wife and fellow dating coach, Emily McKay, while world schooling their two youngest kids. They've been to over 100 countries together, run a travel blog podcast called Wing It Worldwide, and are planning to start a safari company in East Africa. That is so cool, Scott. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome. So thanks again for joining us, and I will just jump right into our questions for today.
Don't be shy on me, Katie. Let it fly.
I would never. Okay. Awesome. So when and how is a good way to have the where is this going conversation in a mature and feminine way?
A short and feminine way.
Mature.
Well, all right. First of all, don't do it on the first date as soon as you sit down with this guy. You know, you sit down with him at Denny's for breakfast on Saturday morning. It's like, so what are your intentions? It's like the guy's just going to go, he's going to recoil. He's going to be like, this is a question. What's the right answer? What's the wrong answer? You know, it's like, so how many women have you slept with? Second question. You know, they take out like, they take out their smartphone and they have it, you know, all itemized. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like.
You know you're on an Excel sheet somewhere.
Right, exactly. So, you've got a situation where you've got women getting on dates and thinking, hey, you know what? I don't want to waste my time. I need to find out where we're going with this, what this guy's goals are in the dating world. Does he want to have kids, whatever? Mm-hmm. Hey, on the first date, let's find out if we even get along. Let's see if we get each other. Mm-hmm. Then we can worry about all those other things. And I'm using my words carefully because I think it is worry. Mm-hmm. Where is this headed? What are we doing here? I think a great time to do that would be on the second date, not the first date. Mm-hmm. And I would carefully word it so that it's not a trap. Mm-hmm. In other words, so, you know, it seemed like be a little vulnerable. Say, it looks like we're getting along here. I'm curious about what you're looking for out of your dating life right now. Mm-hmm. Right. And go ahead and let the guy speak. Watch the body language and make sure he's telling you what he really wants to tell you, not what, you know, he thinks you want to hear. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of debate whether you could give him the first person information or wait for him to go first. Mm-hmm. But men, there seems to be this stereotype that that all men are commitment phobes and all women want to lock you down and get married by tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. But in reality, there are plenty of men who come to me and go, hey, I really want to find a wife as soon as I can and have kids. And I want to get out of the dating world and find the right woman. And there are plenty of women who go, oh, hell no. I just got divorced. The last thing I need right now is to get married, another relationship. I just want to play the field and go meet some guys and go out for a glass of wine and other things. So, I mean, I think having an honest, authentic talk where it's not a minefield, but there's some authenticity there is very important. But I would wait to see if you even get along first before you go for that question.
Yeah. I love the way you described that because there's two things that stuck out to me when you're describing how to have this conversation that appealed as very feminine, right? The curiosity, the openness, right? The lack of, you know, peppering with questions and possible judgments. So, and I love that. I think that that is something. Oh, hey, Pebs. Pebs says hello. That's my cat in the background.
Well, now, hey, look how much popular this video is going to be online now because it's suddenly a cat video.
I'm going to have to create a Facebook for her.
Look, she's so perfectly framed right there. It's like a watermark.
Yeah, I just hope she doesn't she'll just start doing something weird in the background.
Oh, I hope she does. I'm praying for her to do something weird in the background. I think that would make it the most popular video. Much better than my blathering.
She's my sweetie pie. So that's, I love that description because I think that totally embodies what, you know, the mature feminine really means, you know, whether it's on the first date, second date, or the 15th or 30th, you know. So I appreciate that. So in terms of, and so going off that question, kind of how to have awkward conversations in a feminine and mature way. Like if you have to bring up something that is maybe uncomfortable, maybe it has something to do with when you're settling down with the XYZ person, but maybe it's, you know, bringing something up that is like sexually related or whatever. What is a good approach there as well?
Well, I try to genuinely avoid awkward situations instead of promoting them. But I think what you're probably
you
asking
have to, though.
Yeah. When it's got to come up. Like, how do I have the STD talk? Mm-hmm. How do I tell this person that, you know, whatever I think they're not going to want to hear? Mm-hmm. Again, you don't do it on first dates unless it's like really important. It could theoretically have ramifications. Like, look, I'm wanted in 16 states right now. So if the SWAT teams come in and point guns at us, please don't be alarmed. I think that probably needs to happen on the first date. But, you know, and I have people come to me, and I think the awkwardness many times, Katie, is driven by our own limiting beliefs and our own insecurities. Mm-hmm. I've had women tell me on second dates, it's like, okay, look, I have to tell you this. And you're probably never going to want to see me again. And you're going to not, you're going to think I tricked you. And that's why I want to tell you now. So, you know, so if you're going to run away, you could. And then they tell, I said, I'm champing the bit, bated breath. Somehow end the suspense and tell me what this horrible thing is. And, you know, I don't think it's ever been horrible enough for me to run away. Whatever it is they tell me, it's like, okay, can we go make out now? It's like, wow, you really want to kiss me? You know, maybe not exactly like that. But I mean, I remember when I first was divorced, unfortunately, my ex was diagnosed with a rather profound mental illness. Mm. And she still had a way of weaving in some of her crazy ways after the divorce. Mm. And I remember looking in the mirror and go, you know, everybody tells the person on their date that they've got this crazy ex. It's like the popular thing to do.
Yeah.
No, really, seriously, crazy ex, like mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to have to tell women this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to tell them. And when they hear it, they're going to run away. Yeah, nobody wants to deal with the crazy ex. Every time I mentioned it, it was like, oh, if you ever need to go to court, stand up against this woman, you're like the greatest guy. I want to go stand right by. And how does this affect your little daughter? Because I had my little daughter. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, I would, you know, if you need any help at all, you need me to talk to a judge. I mean, and it was the farthest thing from their mind was, okay, he's got a crazy ex, run away. Mm-hmm. You know? One time also, I broke my left leg in a motocross accident when I was there. Mm-hmm. And I was in a cast. And I remember thinking, okay, I'm damaged goods. I'm broken. I'm retired from, I'm, you know, I'm on the shelf from dating for the next 9 weeks. Mm. I mean, I'm on crutches for God's sake. I actually got on match.com and met this wonderful, adorable woman. And I told her on the phone, I said, well, before we go out on a date or anything, I think you need to know this. And she's like, well, it's going to heal, isn't it? I'm like, well, yes. I mean, it's like, well, you know, so you're on crutches for now. It happens. I'm like, really? It's like, yeah, you know. And it was like, all right. So I took her out on crutches, and it went perfectly well. You know, I mean, if I met a woman and I liked her and she was on crutches, I'd be really sorry she broke her leg. But I would, you know, yeah. I would just kick this woman to the curb because she broke her leg. Emily and I, one time when we were first starting, we stopped doing this. We would go look up other people's dating advice to see what we could drink up and learn from and blah, blah, blah. And we realized very soon that just would make your head. And they were talking about dating disasters on like one of these, you know, link bait websites.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I remember one time I was out on a date with a woman talking. So I better One time I was out on a date with a guy and I spilled coffee all over the table. Needless to say, There was no second date. And Emily and I just looked at each other and went, it wasn't the coffee.
That wasn't coffee.
I mean, I think we beat ourselves up on this stuff. Mm-hmm. You get around to it. I think what you can do is you can say, okay, I mean, especially your timing has to be right. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think you want to take a lighthearted conversation or whatever and turn it negative. But I think, you know, you can kind of get a feel for, okay, we're talking about something more seriously here. Yeah. And you can, okay, well, just in the interest of FY, I think there's this thing you do need to know. And I mean, be careful about what they need to know at what particular time. Mm-hmm. Where this often takes a turn is when it comes to sexual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you have to be respectful of other people's boundaries in terms of what they may or may not be willing to absorb in terms of sexual things going on. But for example, I had a guy who had herpes mm-hmm. and he thought he was damaged goods. No woman mm-hmm. was ever going to love him. And he mm-hmm. had actually played brinksmanship with it out of shame.
What's brinksmanship?
Like in other words, he put people at risk.
Oh yeah.
He mm-hmm. just didn't tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I said, well, you got to have more integrity and character. You got to face up to it. But I said, you know, you're going to find that a lot of people have their own little crosses to bear here and there. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's better they know now than afterwards.
Yeah.
It was the very first time he goes out with a woman. And you know, I said, you also don't have to tell them until it's sexual activity time. You know, mm-hmm. when it's getting sexual, it looks like sex might become imminent.
Mm-hmm.
And he told this woman and she started sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh God, well, you know, now I've hurt her feelings. And she goes, no, I have it too.
Oh, wow.
And both of them had a lot of shame surrounding that. But now that they've actually told each other, imagine lifted off both of their shoulders, right?
That's beautiful. What a load of healing that just happened in that moment between the two of them.
Right. And I mean, you know, it interestingly enough, you remember some of the shame I felt and perhaps the trepidation I felt because my ex was mentally ill. Imagine Emily and I, the weight lifted off our shoulders when we found out very early on that both of our respective exes were on the same medication.
Oh, wow.
I mean, from then on,
yeah,
we've been a team. Yep. We've got each other's back. I mean, it's very hard for either one of our exes to really get any headway with this in the legal and really get under our skin.
Yeah.
And you know, it's because we got each other's back. We can see the forest for the trees for each other.
Yeah. So, I love that. I love that, those stories. Thank you for sharing them. And I love what it brings to this conversation is in terms of vulnerability, right?
Yes.
It's one of my favorite topics to talk about, being authentic. And people are so afraid to share who they are because they are self-rejecting all the time. We are so, right. We're way meaner to ourselves sometimes than other people would ever be. And the self-critical thing, you know, once you can stop doing that, I mean, just so much opens up. And mm-hmm. I absolutely love that you and your wife have just, you know, bonded so much over that. Right.
I do have one thing I want to add because I think it's very important to the question you just asked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't invent things you need to tell people when it's not necessarily necessary to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes people still have a lot of shame or guilt mm-hmm. or they just get used to seeing themselves in a certain frame of mind and feel like they have to tell people that.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, I had a guy
dumping. Right.
He had an HIV scare, you know, and it turned out he was negative, but he had to wait 6 months, you know, and then 9 months and it was still clear afterwards,
mm-hmm.
conclusive test negative. And he felt like he had to tell every woman he dated mm-hmm. that he had an HIV scare.
Hmm.
And I think you just freak people out by doing that. There was negative. There was nothing to talk about.
Yeah,
you don't owe people that information. That's right. Not something that they need to know. That's something that it's a misplaced guilt and shame within you that feels like you have to get that off your chest. That's very different than having a necessary awkward conversation with someone. Now, if you're also talking about awkward conversation of like, I don't want to see you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's also an awkward conversation. Interestingly enough, one of the freebies you're going to get from me at the end of this interview is dealing with breakups. And it gives you four ways to handle how to end a relationship with someone, whether you've known them a long time or a short time, or whether they did something heinous to you or they were perfectly decent. Of course, if you know them for a long time, they were perfectly decent, that's the hardest way to go. But rather than burn time here, go ahead and download that and read it. But that is sometimes a very awkward conversation that needs to be had. And again, this isn't like buy my book. I'm handing it to you for free. Just check the link. So No harm, no foul there.
Yeah. I love what you just shared too about, you know, being specific about what you want to share with people. Because there's some things that people need to know and there's some things people really don't want or need to know either. And at some point it just becomes airing your dirty laundry. So do be thoughtful about, you know, what you're sharing and how, you know, I think that's really important.
And that's not gender specific. Men and women both feel like they've got to be incredibly like, sometimes even on my online profile, it's like, you know, should I tell on my online profile that the tip of my left pinky finger is missing because of a, you know, wood shop accident? No, not on your online profile. It's like, hey, be sure to run away from me even though you don't even know me because of my limiting belief. Just, okay, let me ensure my lack of success. No, you don't need to do that.
So what was it about your wife that made you know that she was the one?
Well, I have a whole litany of things that I go through in terms of knowing whether she's the one. But I think if you really want to decide whether this person is the one or not, you can be pretty sure when you come to the conclusion you don't have any need for any other body to date. You're female audience can take this or leave it, but I was always very ethical about it. I would date several people at the same time because I like the company of women, and I wasn't a man whore or anything. I just had lots of women. And by the time I met Emily, all these women were wonderful. They were all the kind of women who can't get past a second or third date without the guy wanting to marry them. I mean, no commitment phobes in sight. And I would think, okay, oh, who do I want to see tonight? I mean, oh, well, you know, this woman, I haven't seen her in a few days. Let's go out with her. Well, I met Emily and it was like, well, who do I want to go out with tomorrow? I think I want to go out with the girl I met yesterday. Sunday turned to Monday. Who do you want to go out tonight? Well, you know, I really like that new one. Yeah. Tuesday, well, I want to go out with Emily again. Wednesday, Emily. Thursday, surprise, Emily. And then, you know, the next thing you know, she's my first choice all the time. When you get to that point, what drives that feeling is this almost supernatural feeling that you get each other, you know?
Yeah.
That you can read the other person's thoughts. She's one of you, you know? You're on the same team. You're two of a kind. Then I also think people who are generous and optimistic and have strong character have really built the foundations of a great relationship, and it's easy to like people who are like that. Unfortunately, I think most dating advice nowadays is here's how to get someone of the opposite sex as opposed to the other sex to give you what you want. Here's how to take. It feeds a narcissistic reality that I think has actually escalated in recent years, no thanks to social media. I mean, it's almost cool to be narcissistic nowadays. You know, everybody puts their highlight reel on Twitter and Facebook and look at me and how cool I am. I even saw someone this morning going, hey, don't think for a second that you shouldn't post all your wins on Facebook because we're all energized by it. I'm like, you know, we're becoming a faker and faker culture by the second. And it's all feed me, you know, entertain me. People go out on dates and go, you got 10 seconds to entertain me. If you don't, I'm kicking your human being to the curb.
Yeah.
And everybody, even more profoundly than that, is expecting they've got 10 seconds to perform or they're going to be kicked to the curb.
Right.
And that narcissistic dating ideal, you know, that is actually being driven by dating advice. You know, you've seen those god-awful videos like, here are three simple words that you can whisper in his or her ear and drop everything and do everything for you from now on. Ooh, let me buy that. That's just, that's wrongheaded.
Yeah.
If you're a giver, if you're a giver, two givers.
Yes. Yes.
They contribute more than the sum of their parts to a relationship. Mm-hmm. 2 + 2 = 10 or 15 with Emily and I.
Yeah.
I hear 20. You know, we never work on our relationship. Our relationship is never work.
Yeah.
You know, that's like this bit, there's so many bits of dating advice that have been passed on as a meme for so long that people just assume they're true and they just like to say it. You know, our marriage is never work. Mm-hmm. you know, it's work if it's the wrong person, or we're trying to circumvent each other. I have to figure out what they're thinking, or I have to learn to trust them. You know, if you're optimistic and you're trying to do the best for the other person and you're thinking the best of the other person, and by the way, you're a person of character who isn't a cheater or some kind of bad guy, well, then you're going to be a lot better off in that relationship. And that's how you know, that foundation carries you into a relationship being relationship ready. And then from there, it's like, am I on the wavelength with this person? Do we get each other? Now, at the risk of sounding politically incorrect, you know, I'm putting my fursuit on. It was incredibly important to me that my wife be cute and sexy to me. And I have a type. My celebrity crushes have all, I mean, you know, I'm of this age so that we're the same age. But I remember the 1984 Olympics, I was sure Mary Lou Retton was my future wife. Mary Lou Retton was amazing. And I always thought Valerie Bertinelli was really hot, you know. And they're both these cute little spunky brunettes you can pinch their cheeks with a cute little attitude and bright little smiles. If you see a picture of my wife, she looks like Valerie Bertinelli and Mary Lou Retton had a head-on collision and created this cute, spunky little perfect woman.
Yeah, she does.
she may not be every guy's type, though. See, so that's why I unabashedly, you know, bring that up, because some other guy may want a completely different kind of woman. And you know, that all is subjective. I have a friend of mine, he likes big barrel-chested women because he's a big barrel-chested guy. And, you know, he'll look at a woman and go, oh my God, should I ask her out? I mean, she's so hot. And I'll say, go for it, man. I mean, you know, she's your type. Who knows? You know, I don't know how many guys are interested in a woman like that, but you know, everybody's interested in a different kind of woman. So, you know, the whole physical type thing has been media driven and it's really, really subjective. So that's why I don't mind saying, not only did this little chick walk in the door, I knew I was in trouble as soon as I saw her, but then, you know, when we sat down and we connected with each other, it was just like all the pieces fit in the puzzle. And then it makes it easy to establish the relationship.
Yeah. And I love what you said there about how your relationship isn't work because it's just great. Because you're constantly, you know, thinking about what you can give to the relationship. And, you know, the other piece I think of that, right, is you know, coming from an area of appreciation instead of expectation. You were just talking about, you know, the narcissism. What can you give me? What can you give me? Instead of saying, oh, I really appreciate you for showing up for me in that way. And I really appreciate this gratitude and this generosity. I mean, it's like, I think it's such a big part of having a really successful relationship. And I was actually really curious to ask you how that plays into, you know, because you guys travel a lot, right? And you have kids and you're schooling your kids all over the world. That's something I'm really curious to know. That's a lot of, you know, balls to juggle. How do you guys do that and, you know, keep your cool and keep, you know, keep everything together?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. One time I was invited to go for a family-oriented event that was, you know, organized by another dad. And he and his two kids were the first two people there. And then I got there ahead of my wife and my two youngest who were coming by a different car. And his two kids were already playing with each other. And they were going, I hate you. Oh my God. I wish you would die. Yeah. Well, you're the worst sister. I wish you never would have been born. Oh, I hate you. You know, you're a big jerk, you know? And the dad was just like, hey, you two, calm down, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So they had to separate. All right, let's take a deep breath. And I hate you. Oh, you're the worst. And then they're like whispering, sneering at each other. And they're siblings, you know?
Yeah.
and I was taken aback because I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 16-year-old and a 20-year-old. And I've never seen them once insult each other and show hate. I've never seen it. They've never done it. I mean, now they can squabble over whose turn it is with the Legos. It's like, Dad, you know, Sarah's trying to do this. And, you know, but they don't go, I hate you. They, you know, they giggle and laugh and they protect, and older brother protects younger sister. And I was just, it occurred to me how spoiled I am because my kids don't do that. I don't ever even see this. And yet the dad treats it as if it was normal.
Yeah.
And now you see, it hit me. It hit me like a tidal wave. Their parents don't model that.
Yeah.
Emily and I adore each other. Emily and I don't ever insult each other. Yep. We don't, even when we get cranky and hungry, you know, because we get each other, we give each other room to be cranky and hungry. We don't take it personally because our self-esteem is there. We actually adore each other. We're thrilled with each other. We don't feel like we settled. We felt like we made the right choice. We chose each other from many options, and we know it. We chose each other from an abundance mentality. People are like, well, how can I get men to chase me? You don't want men to chase you. You don't want, it's unattractive. You want to choose each other.
Yeah.
It's like somebody's the chooser and the other person's chasing, and this person has all the power, and they get to choose and reject whoever they don't want. No. Emily and I both came into this from a position of abundance and chose each other. Look how nicely it fits together. And so that's where our relationship is coming from. So it's effortless. And people are like, oh, God, they're rolling their eyes. Well, look, we're coming from a position of wanting to do right by each other. We have strong character. We believe in being good to each other. Mm-hmm. Neither one of us are narcissistic people who are sucking the life out of each other. You know, we're giving. And we also have fun. We like each other. Both of us are of sound mind. It works pretty well. And we're sexually attracted to each other, God help her. You know? So, you know, I still am just hot for my wife. Mm. Now, you mentioned, how does that relate to the traveling and the kids? Well, now you realize how our family relates, because we don't insult our children either. I mean, we relate to our children as we relate to ourselves. Now, do they try our patience to within an inch of our lives sometimes? Yes, but it never, I mean, sometimes we get upset and we send them into timeout, and it's like, you know, we get frustrated, but they never think we hate them. They always know we love them. We don't insult them. We don't call them stupid. We don't underestimate them.
Yeah.
So when we go traveling, you know, our attitudes are also one of the ways we're going to keep this relationship fun and interesting is to be fun and interesting. I mean, how do you keep a relationship fun and interesting? Hey, here's a hit. Don't be boring. Don't do the same thing every day. Don't watch it all happen on TV.
Yeah. So
we have prioritized how we spend our money to the point that we don't necessarily buy the latest and best and most expensive stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, what we do is we focus on experiences.
Yeah.
And we've done wonderful, amazing things, and we've taken our children on it. And we also, because we have good, solid self-esteem, we also instill that in our kids, and we give them room to explore, and we think that they can handle these trips. And, you know, they can sit. It's funny how much they complain and moan about things at home in the comfort of suburbia. Mm-hmm. Then when we take them to, you know, a developing country, and we run into a puzzle, we have to, like, you know, the plane's delayed, and, you know, we got to run and catch this one because when the connection at the airport is going to leave unless we just hightail it to the airport. They're not complaining and crying. They're like, okay, cool. We know what we got to do. Let's do it. If the bathrooms are dirty, we all figure it out together. The kids aren't complaining. If the food is different than what they see in the United States, they see that as an adventure. The culture, the people, the church they go to, the music they listen to, our kids have been taught all of that is an adventure. All of that is making them smarter. All of that is fun and delightful.
Yeah.
And because we model that, and we're not bitching and complaining about everything that's happening on this trip, and because we're teaching those kids that way, what we end up with is very culturally informed children, mm-hmm. colorblind children, mm-hmm. Children who respect other people regardless of differences. You mentioned the word world schooling. Mm-hmm. To clarify that, what we do is we homeschool our children. Mm-hmm. And part of that is their field trips are world travel. We take them all over the world as part of their education while we're teaching them curriculum.
That's awesome. But
it's not unschooling or any, you know, we're not conspiracy theorists. What we are is we want freedom. You know,
yeah,
we have achieved a level of freedom with our business by being location independent entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And we trust ourselves to educate our children with the curriculum. Emily does a wonderful job. And we just believe in not watching it all on TV or having it written on a chalkboard, but going out and
experiencing it. I think that's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, what lucky kids, really.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? We tell them that all the time. Someday they're going to believe us. Like, you lucky little, you know. I don't call them names.
They're great role models, you know. I mean, monkey see, monkey do, right? So, you know, that's, yeah, I mean, that's a great story.
I mean, I have a 30, I have a 30-year-old daughter who's been to four countries. I have a 4-year-old daughter who's been to 30 countries.
Wow.
And that's cool.
I haven't probably been to half that many countries. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, you've been to twice as many countries as most people. I mean, we know people who never left their neighborhood and they live in here in San Antonio. Yeah, we know people who haven't even been to the south side of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, I believe that there's no greater adventure than exploring the world and meeting new people and eating their food and listening to their music, because, you know, you can watch Anthony Bourdain all day, mm-hmm. but you're not going to taste the food or meet the people. You're only going to get what he chooses to tell you, show you on TV. You're not going to get to, you know, experience what it's like to be there and have that enrich you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I totally agree. And I love that adventurous spirit that you guys have. It's really super inspiring.
Oh, and by the way, we do take our children on adventures.
Yeah. I mean,
some of the crazier adventures Emily and I go on, we leave them with grandma and grandpa. Mm-hmm. But more and more, especially as they get past toddler age, mm-hmm. you know, we're taking them. We're like, we went to Cappadocia, Turkey, and we took them on the hot air balloon with us. They went hot air ballooning with us.
That's awesome.
You know, when we go on like safaris, you know, we took them to Ethiopia on an 8-day road trip, and they, you know, they went hiking to see the Galata baboons in the Mist Mountains with us. And, mm-hmm. you know, they went on the boat ride on the Nile and saw the hippopotamus in the wild with us. You know, they're on those adventures with us, and they're meeting the kids, and it's very different, and it's a culture shock. And we've taken to countries where the religious beliefs are very different, and they get to see firsthand that you can't always believe what they tell you on the news about these countries and these people. Right. And so, you know, you end up with kids who are really savvy for a 4 and 8-year-old, and yeah. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see. It's all positive.
I think that's beautiful. You know, travel the world, learn and form your own opinions.
Yeah.
That's just fantastic. So I'll wrap up with one more question. So for folks out there who might be feeling discouraged or unsure about, you know, their dating life going forward, what words of advice, words of wisdom, you know, inspiration might you have for folks who are struggling right now?
Well, first of all, you can't be perfect, and nobody likes anybody who is perfect anyway. Rest assured that everybody out there has a limiting belief or 6 that they think is the exact thing everybody of the other gender doesn't want. Okay.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, I had a guy come to me one time, and he explained very carefully what his limiting belief was, and he was convinced no women could ever want a guy who was like that. Because it was, you know, that was his, that if he could just get rid of that, or if that wasn't what was going on, women would love him. Mm-hmm. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I could say the same thing about myself. I mean, he was describing me, but in my entire adult life, it never even occurred to me that that would even be unattractive.
Right.
You know, but it was like deeply ingrained. Oh my God, every woman in the world. I mean, I'm affected by this, and I don't even see it as a problem. I mean, it's a first-person thing. People have this stuff going on, and they think it has disqualified them from ever being happy with someone else. And it's like wholly irrelevant to the rest of the world. You know, granted, there are some things that people have a certain preference toward or not. And that's fine. You got to deal with the fact that if someone finds you unattractive, they're not speaking for the entire other gender, you know. And that's what I would tell people. And then I would also tell people to remember there's someone else on this first date. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure, is that person comfortable? Is that person feeling good? You know, hey, if it's an online dating date, you can sit down and go, hey, you know, you look exactly like your pictures, maybe even better. Or even say, hey, you know what, this is going well, I'm having fun. I remember when I first started saying that to women, because, you know, guys are taught, don't ever give women compliments because you look needy and clingy. I remember as soon as I started doing those two things, I would meet the woman, at the coffee shop and go, you know, you look terrific. You look better than your pictures. You go, oh, really? Thanks. You could almost hear, you could almost see her go, oh, and relax. Yeah. And then, you know, it's not like I'm being needy or, you know, the way I look at it is like I just gushed pre-approval at her. It's like every woman I go out with could be beautiful. I could have been out with, you know, 15 women who look better than their pictures this week. It doesn't reflect poorly on me to tell her that. And then the next thing is if I'm enjoying the date, I tell her as soon as I am. I'd say something like, hey, you know, you're all right. I like you. You're pretty cool. This is going well. And she'll say something like, sometimes it's even like, aw, it is going well. I like you too. You know, and again, it's just helping someone feel at ease with you, which is huge.
Yeah.
Ladies, don't forget that men are attracted to women, not other men. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be one of us. You don't have to like football. You don't have to bait your own hook. Mm-hmm. You don't have to out-alpha us at the dinner table. I just talked to someone who lives in New York City, and they like, every time he goes out with a woman, she's tougher than he is. You know, it's a one-upmanship battle for who's tougher. And it's like, I'm just,
yeah,
you know, I want to move up to Poughkeepsie or something.
Yeah, but it makes it competitive, yeah. You know. Counterintuitive, but don't do it.
Also, whatever your reasons are for not dating, go out there and meet people anyway. Like if you just got divorced, don't say, oh, you have to wait a year to ever date again. Go out and meet someone. Just make friends. Because if you sit there by yourself for a year, all you've done is given yourself a year to feel sorry for yourself. And that's just not productive.
Yeah. No. I totally agree with you. This thing people do about taking themselves out of the game, you know, before anything even starts, it's like, you're missing out. You know, just because you had one experience with one person does not define you as a human being.
Or it comes back to the limiting beliefs. Like, I got to lose 30 pounds before I go dating. Or I've got to, you know, my face has to clear up before I date. I have to go to the gym. I have to get a job. Whatever it is, it's always going to be something. I mean, I have people come to me wanting me to coach them and get them to the point where they're successful in their dating lives. And they go, all right, well, I'll see you in 2 months after I take care of all these things. I go, that's my job. My job is to help you get over those things faster than a couple of months. It's all part of the process. You know, I'll tell people, hey, look, I see the potential in you. I can meet you where you are. And then they're still, I mean, and sometimes it's like it's an evasion mechanism too, because they're just afraid they're going to jump out of this plane and splat, you know, because if I do devote the time and resources and I do go for it, what if I get no results? Then I'm really going to feel like a loser and like I'm unattractive. So, you know, go out there, meet people. You're going to, you know, I am continually surprised. And I've done this. This is going to sound so funny to you, right? I don't know how you're going to take it, but I mean, we're trying to help people along here. So I'm just going to spit it out. It's one of those awkward conversations.
I love it.
I've been a dating coach, Katie, for 11 years. And I've got a wonderful, cute little wife. And I am continually, perpetually shocked at how attractive I am to women. I still don't believe it. I still can't believe it. Women respond to me so powerfully. I mean, guys come to me and they get off the plane. They look at me and they go, you? I go, well, yeah, let's go. And then I may not say it, but the body language is there.
Yeah.
This is, you know, and I go out and I meet women and they just adore me and they think I'm terrific. And it's all because I'm masculine and I put them at ease and I bring out the playful is what I call it.
Yeah.
And it just brightens women up, and that playfulness turns into attraction. But I'm still, even I'm the guy who teaches this stuff, Katie. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I go out there, you know, it's like, except for the grace of God, here go I. We're going to teach this guy how to meet women. I'm out in the field helping him feel more comfortable with women and more confident with women. And I am still continuously amazed by how well my stuff works. You know, how well what I teach works.
The proof's in the pudding.
Yeah, but my point is not so much that. It's you know, all of us are too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And every one of us struggles with it. And I think, you know, we were talking about going to a developing country like in Ethiopia. People relate so much easier to each other and are so much happier with everybody. And there's so much more community. Because, see, in the West, we have a certain amount of financial resources available to us to cover all of that up with a shield. You know, we can change our appearance, you know, how do we greet each other? How are you? Well, the answer better be I'm fine.
Right.
You know,
nobody really wants to know if you're not fine.
So, you know, here we are living with our own demons inside, and we see light uniquely through our own eyes, and we see everybody else out there, and we think, okay, well, what you see is what you get. Inside, they're just as clean and squeaky as I am, you know, as I see them to be. Meanwhile, look at all, I mean, if they only knew half of what I had ever done or all the shame I felt, they'd never talk to me again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and now I think that's unfortunate, but I think once people start wrapping their head around how hard it is to have self-esteem when you really only know yourself so intimately, you can start forgive yourself and start kind of welcoming the idea that everybody else kind of has a common condition, even if we don't feel their respective condition, you know.
Personally. Yeah. Releasing the perfectionism. And I love how that links back to actually the vulnerability conversation we had too, Scott, because the more it's, again, another bonus of being, you know, open with yourself to a point is that you'll discover that really everybody's the same. We all have our own stuff going on, and imperfection is everywhere, and it's beautiful. So,
and ladies, guys do have feelings. I just want to throw that out there. Sometimes women think guys are tough and they can withstand anything, but you know,
yeah,
we do have feelings, but please do play cool with us because
handle with care.
We are just like you. You
know. Yes, absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll wrap up. Thank you so much again, Scott, for this interview. It was wonderful. And please, everyone, check out the links below for Scott's free gift. All right. Next time. Bye.